I want to thank our sponsors. We had lots of people who took the opportunity to support these teachings, support Venerable Amy, support Kadapa Center in bringing visiting teachers. It's very beneficial to us, and it's also beneficial to the sponsor. Karmically, when you support the teachings, you're creating the cause to receive teachings yourself in the future. And it's also, you know, one of the highest forms of generosity is you are giving the Dharma by supporting the teachings. So thank you for that. We're very appreciative. Just some things coming up. You can still sponsor or just donate to support the teachings. Coming up in the next few weeks, Monday evening, we have a discussion session. It's called Taking It to Heart. And this is an opportunity to get together and talk amongst our peers, among more experienced students and less experienced students than ourselves. And it's really a great way to bring up the questions that maybe we're too timid to ask when a teacher is here, or maybe just come up in a different way when we're all just sitting together and talking. And I meant to check. Do you know what the topic is, Aaron? Okay. So it's going to be possibly what is happiness and whatever is in people's hearts so they can take it to heart. And speaking of what's the topic, on Sunday, Venerable Amy wants to kind of follow in what Gesa likes to do on Sunday mornings and answer questions that you have. So if questions come up this weekend that you don't have a chance to get answered, or if there are other questions that aren't being addressed here and you'd like to have that part of the discussion Sunday morning, please do bring those questions. Also coming up on March 4th, we start the next Discovering Buddhism module. It is How to Meditate, and it will be taught by Don Brown. And this is, again, we're in the early stages of this two-year cycle of Discovering Buddhism curriculum. This is just the second module, so if you're interested, please register and come to the class. We also have a Lam Rim Meditation Saturday coming up on the 9th of March, Meditations on the Mind, and that's from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. And that's a meditation that anybody is welcome to come to, but it's also one that's designed to help people who are taking Discovering Buddhism meet that practice part of the curriculum. And then last but not least, tomorrow on Saturday, if you come for the whole day, we really encourage you to pack a lunch and plan to stick around. I think we're only going to take an hour break tomorrow instead of an hour and a half. And Venerable Amy really encourages people to stay and talk over lunch about all the questions that came up during the morning. So that's all. And we expect her soon if her driver can make it through the terrible traffic. And thank all of you for braving the traffic. And we could just get our minds ready now while we wait. One other quick little item. When we do offer the mandala to Venerable Amy, we'll be chanting the short mandala offering that begins on the bottom of page 97. So if you have your books open and ready, we can just act like we've been practicing this for months and months and months. Saji Puki Jukshing Metok Dramri Rablingji Nide Genpadi Sange Jingdu Mite Uwa Idro Kunamdag Jingla Chuparsho Jetsun Lama Dampa Kenam Kichu Kukala Gänse Tschutzintrig, Gitarzampe, Dulce Zinma, Lazab, Gechuki, Charpa, Wab, Tusol, Iram Guru Ratna Mandala Kam Nirya Tayami.
Okay, is it, it's on? It's on. Okay, great. You can hear me in the back?
Yeah.
Okay, thank you so much for coming. Thank you very much. It's lovely to see many of you again and to meet some new people, new faces. My name is Amy, if you haven't met me before. So I am sorry I'm late, and I'm jokingly, the person who picked me up, I wanted to come out and say, you're late, right? Okay, so one of the things we're going to talk about this weekend, Lojong, lo is mind, Jong, transformation of your mind, if that interests you. I'm very interested in the transformation of my mind because there are experiences in my mind I'm not satisfied with. Anybody have that experience? Right? And there's some experiences in my mind I'm really happy with. You have that experience? Right? Okay. So is it possible to transform the experiences I'm not happy with to something that's more satisfying? And Tibetan Buddhism says absolutely. In fact, that's the main trajectory of Tibetan Buddhism. So this is what we're going to do. So again, I could say to the person that picked me up, this is often a response in our culture, is it not? You're late. You know, it's your fault. It's your fault. And so what Lojong says, one of the famous mind training slogans we will talk about this weekend, place all the blame on one. Place all the blame on one. What's the one? What's the one? Self-cherishing. You're self-cherishing. That's the only thing there is to blame. Okay? I'm not getting down on you, and it's not about you getting down on yourself. Okay? But it's our self-absorption, our selfishness. You could all layer that into self-cherishing. And that's the only real problem you have. That's the thing that gets in the way of your happiness. So can I change that? Can I transform that? Yep, absolutely. So we're going to talk about how does that work. We have to start first identifying, and we have to start looking at our mind and getting real, getting honest with our minds. A lot of you are already doing that. Some of you are new to that process. It doesn't matter. We're all in the same boat here. So that's the only thing. So, and what happens is you can watch your own mind showing up. So I didn't actually have any irritation about whoever picked me up, whenever they did. You know, it was nice they picked me up. It's nice that they arrange a schedule and they give me a nice printed schedule with who's going to pick me up and who, you know, and it's all very organized, very kind. So I didn't have any problem because I knew that the program wasn't really going to start without me. I thought, you know, I figured... You know, well, you know, and the person in the car, we were joking, and he even said, well, he goes, you're not going to miss anything, you know, because, so, you know, like, so it's a nice way to, and this is all about turning your problems into opportunities to transform your mind to the point where you start to welcome problems. What do you think about that? You start to welcome problems. It's unique, isn't it? Who wants problems? Who in our culture, I don't know anybody, that as soon as there's a problem, there's an issue, people say. You know, and it's heavy. It can be really heavy at times. People have health problems. People have mental health problems. People have issues at work, and they have issues in their family and with their partners, and it's endless. It's endless. You're in samsara, you will always have problems. So why not use the problems in a positive way? So we're going to look at that as what happens when this bowling ball is gigantic and it's rolling towards me now. and I don't have any control over my mind, what am I going to do? So this is what we're going to talk about. But I want to first get us in the mood. And what I like to do is we just did, it was very nice, an offering prayer. They're very kind to make an offering to me. Kind of, it's traditional about requesting the teachings. That's how our teachings happen, is we're requested. And we have a tradition like that. I don't just say, I think I'll go to Raleigh this weekend, you know. They've actually asked, and very kind. And then we often do some prayers to, in a sense, get us in the mood. So one of the things I'd like to do, and we've done this before, there's a Refuge Bodhicitta prayer. And it is on, let's see if I can find it. It's one of the essential prayers we do before teachings. Let's see. Okay. And it is on page 98. It's Refuge and Bodhicitta before the teaching. Okay? Now, some of you are very familiar with this, no problem. But somebody mentioned, somebody said page 34. So I just want to give you a distinction between page 34 and page 98. Some of you already know this. But if you're newer, this is a little secret, okay? And you're going to find out about this. And then suddenly you're going to hear new students show up at some point before teaching, and they're doing the prayer on page 34, and you're going to say, well, no, it's really Ningi. Ningipe. You're going to know that, the difference, what the difference is. Okay, look on page 98. Fundamental prayer that contains the whole path. I go for refuge until I'm enlightened. We're going to read this together in a moment. To the Buddha, Dharma, Supreme Assembly. By the merits I create through listening to the Dharma. Okay? If you go to page 34, the middle prayer, taking refuge and generating bodhicitta, look at line 3. By my practice of giving and other perfections. Okay? Just slight little words. That's the prayer you do in your own practice. If you've taken refuge, you wake up in the morning maybe when you sit, and you can say that prayer 3 times in the morning, 3 times at night. Sometimes it's a commitment when you actually kind of acknowledge Buddhism as your path and, as we say, take refuge. Okay? But before teaching, it's about listening to the Dharma. Listening to the Dharma. So in Tibetan you have Jin Sogipe, by the practice of giving and other perfections, which is the bodhicitta path to enlightenment. You need to perfect those situations of generosity, moral conduct, patience, joyous effort, things like that. But when before a teaching, we're going to say Chin Ningipe, I create through listening to the Dharma. Okay, everybody got it? So now you have a little something there, and you know, I know something now. Okay, because I remember in the beginning when you're around the Dharma about a year, 3 years, and then a new student pops up, and they're next to you in a teaching, and you hear them saying Jinsogi, and you go, no, it's Ningi. Yeah. So I know that, you know. It's neat. It's kind of neat, your little Dharma career. You know, you learn things. It's fun. That's how we get excited about it. Okay. Refuge and bodhicitta before the teachings, but we want to think about what we're saying. It's better, instead of the blah, blah all the time, and some of you, do you ever have you sit down to do your practice, which involves reciting some prayers maybe, and you recited a couple pages, and your mind was off in China doing something else? So you need to go back and recite with concentration on it. That you want to be there with the words, with the prayers, otherwise it doesn't really count in the mind. So we take refuge until we're enlightened. Why do we want to be enlightened? So I can benefit all living beings. It's the very premise of Tibetan Buddhism. It's the very premise. And I take refuge in the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. Some of you have already studied the refuge module of Discovering Buddhism. So you've understood and studied a little bit of the qualities of the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. Okay? And they inspire you, those qualities. And you can value yourself, measure yourself against them, not in a competitive way, but just thinking, wow, that would be a great quality to have if I was fearless. What would that be like? Pretty cool. In this day and age, I think pretty cool. What if I was omniscient, all-knowing? That sounds pretty good. What if I could see the truth directly and never get snagged by tremendous suffering anymore? So you study so that's who we're taking refuge in. You yourself would want to come to some understanding of those objects. Is that valuable? Something I want to take refuge in. Okay? And the merits I get through listening to the Dharma. You needed a lot of merit, honestly, which is good energy, to get yourself in the room right now. Honestly. So you should give yourself credit for that. You need a lot of merit to have connected with Kadampa Center. And the other thing that they have a lot of merit around here is they have this incredibly flourishing center. It's very inspiring, and I talk about Kadampa Center. It's like an incredible example of, how to build a center, how to grow a center, all the dedication of the people that have made this happen. So I do want to thank everybody for helping me get here, for supporting the program. Thank you very much. And again, listening to the Dharma, or even in the other one, by practicing giving and other perfections. Why am I doing it? To become a Buddha. Buddha is a Sanskrit word for awakened, fully awakened being. Why do I want to fully wake up? Because then you're unlimited in benefiting all living beings. So if you want to benefit all living beings, if you have friends that come to you, and some people ask you for advice, they're stuck, they have a big problem. Has that happened in their life? They come, what do you say? What do you advise them? Do you know exactly what to say to them? The best thing? Does anybody know? Have you ever been like you know exactly?
They already know.
Yeah. They already know. But they ask you anyway, right? And they ask you anyway. And so does anybody in here, when they ask you, do you know exactly what the best thing is to say to them or to do for them? Or we're limited, right? We're limited. And then isn't it interesting, your friends, they never listen to you anyway, right? Do they ever take your advice? No. But some people, when they talk it out, sometimes they come to their own insight. Well, that's okay. That's being a good friend. You can listen. But as a Buddha, you know. Every single moment you know. It's an exciting place to be. So I want to fully wake up, okay? And then our premise again is to benefit all living beings. So with that in mind, let's recite this prayer. Let's recite it once in the English and twice in the phonetics. And feel free to join in if you'd like. I go for refuge until I'm enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By the merits I create through listening to the Dharma, may I become a Buddha in order to benefit all living beings. O Sangye Chodan Tsoki Chonam La Janchu Bardu Dagni Kyab Suchi Agi Jiningi Pe Sonam Gi Drola Penchu Sangye Drupar Jo Sangye Chodan Tsoki Chonam La Chubardu Dagni Kyab Suchi Dagi Jiningi Pe Sonam Gi Drola Penchu Sangye Drupar Jo. Okay, so one other prayer I'd like to do, if you'll indulge me. So I heard through the grapevine, so there's a wonderful retreat, as you know, that Kadampa Center has been so kind to host called Light of the Path that is held outside Asheville, North Carolina, every few years. And there is a schedule for 2020 in August, and the retreat's led by Lama Zopa Rinpoche, the teacher on the right, on your right, our main spiritual director of our centers. So I've been to all these retreats, and they're very, very special. And sometimes they're 2 weeks, sometimes a month. So in order to clear obstacles to this retreat happening in August 2020, Rinpoche suggested that Tara praises be recited because they clear obstacles. And as you know, you've got all the Tara statues. There's 21 versions of Tara. So one represents long life, but the main green Tara we're used to is an obstacle remover. An obstacle remover. So, you know, if you would like a parking space in Manhattan, you know, Om Tara Tutare Ture. So, okay. So that's not the best thing to be reciting for. I mean, unless you're attending some great program that, but for this retreat to happen to clear obstacles would be a wonderful thing to ask Tara and all the other Taras. So I thought we could just add to that count by reciting some of these praises. What page is it on?
191.
So if you can turn to page 191, we're going to recite one time through, and maybe somebody wants to count how many people are in here. Because then we can add that to the count. So that would be great. Unless you don't want to recite, you can tell them you didn't recite. That's okay. From your sublime abode at the Potala, O Tara born from the green letter Tam, your crown adorned with Amitabha, action mother of the Buddhas of the three times, Tara, please come with your attendants. The gods and demigods bow to your lotus feet, O Tara, you who rescue all who are destitute. To you, Mother Tara, I pay homage. So there's a verse for every Tara, okay? Om, I prostrate to the noble transcendent liberator. Homage, Tara, swift, heroic, eyes like lightning instantaneous, sprung from opening stamens of Lord of three worlds, tear-born lotus. Homage, she whose face combines 100 autumn moons at fullest, blazing with light rays resplendent, 1,000-star collection. Homage, golden blue one lotus, water-born and hand-adorned, giving effort, calm austerities, patience, meditation, hearse. Homage, crown of Tathagatas, actions triumph without limb, relied on by conqueror's children, having reached every perfection. With Tutare, whom desire direction and cling with her feet the seven worlds, able to draw forth all beings. Homage, worship by the All Lord, Chakra Agni Brahma Maru, heard by the host of spirits, corpse raisers, Gandharvas, Yakshas. Homage with her trade and paid sounds, foes magic diagrams, her feet pressing left outright in, blazing in a raging fire. Homage to Re, very dreadful, destroyer of Mara's champ, she with frowning lotus visage, who is slayer of all enemies, jat the heart her fingers, adorn her with three jewel mudra. Excited, all directions wheels adorn her, homage she so joyous raid, crown emitting garlands of light, mirthful laughing with Tutar, subjugating Mara's devas, homage she able to summon all earth guardians assembly, shaking, frowning with her hong sign, saving from every misfortune. Homage, crown adorned with crescent, moon all ornaments most shine, Amitabha in her hair knot, sending out much light eternal. Homage, she made wreath ablaze like eon ending fire abiding. Joy surrounds you, troops of enemies destroying. Homage, she. Her palm and with her foot beats it, scaling with the letter Hung Na. Seven levels she does conquer. Homage, happy, virtuous, peaceful. She whose field is peace, Nirvana. She endowed with Om and Soha, destroyer of the great evil. Homage, she with joy surrounded, tearing foes' bodies asunder. Hung and knowledge mantra, arrangement of the 10 letters. Homage, Dure with seed letter. Of the shape of syllable Hung, by foot stamping shakes the three worlds, Meru, Manda, Yar, and Vindhya. Hanna, hair marked moon of Deva lake form, Tara and Pei, totally dispelling poison, homage she whom gods and their kings, the Kinaras do honor, armored in all joyful splendor, she dispels bad dreams and conflicts. Two eyes bright with radiance of sun and full moon, with twice Hara and Tutar, she dispels severe contagion, homage full of liberate, power by the set of three natures, destroys hosts of spirits, yakshas, and raise corpses supreme tur. These praises with the root mantras and frustrations, thus are 21. If you turn to the next page at the bottom, her mantra. We'll just recite a few, and really directed to please remove any obstacles from the Light of the Path retreat being hosted by Kadampa Center in 2020. May there be no obstacles to that happening for the entire time, with Rinpoche there guiding us the entire time for the benefit of all. Om Tare Tutare Ture Soha. 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 Thank you very much. So also in your own practice, it's very challenging to practice now, isn't it? Find it challenging? It's a lot of distractions out there. So you can also do some prayers more quickly if that works for you, as long as you're focused on them and the mind is thinking about what you're saying. But, you know, Rinpoche sometimes does dedications very quickly, and it's not exactly all that we want to do all the time, but I do the Tara praises, and I often do them in Tibetan, and I can do them really quickly, and so I'm doing them every day, and it's kind of more merged with my mind. And you can do some prayers more quickly if it's helpful, at least to do them, as opposed to, I don't have time, it will take me too long, I'm not going to do them, you know, like that. So, and then when you have more time, you can spend more time slowly, if you'd like. And the Tara praises happen to have a certain energy, so it's better in some ways to do them a bit more quickly, where they're energetic and you keep going. And I talked to Donna about to try to get the numbers done so you can have, we just did this in New York on New Year's, an all-night Tara practice. And I've been at centers where you recite just the praises sometimes over and over all night with breaks. You know, breaks like coffee and chocolate cake breaks because you want to stay awake. And for younger people especially, they enjoy, you know, it's a nice camaraderie, and you can sleep out for rock concert tickets all night, or you can come to Kadampa Center and do Tara praises. I mean, what do you think would be better, okay? So so it is really nice, and it leaves a very positive imprint on your mind, and hopefully can clear obstacles. And you can also use it for any obstacles you need clearing in your own life, whether it's a job situation, relationship problems, other things like that. You can definitely ask Tara for help. And I think over the years I've developed a little bit of faith, because it's not that I see her, but somehow the obstacle, something has shifted like that. When I, you know, it's really the essence of prayer, right? Calling from the heart, you know, you're trying to connect to some other energy that may inspire you, that may protect you, that may know more than you. So I think if we have some faith that there's something like that out there that we can connect, and that's what some of these images, they simply are reminders for us of the omniscient mind, of where we can get. So they're just basically representations. Buddhism has a slightly different belief system than our Abrahamic religions, you know, of Christianity, Judaism, Islam, that has a God, the creator. So that in a sense, there's this separate being that's making your reality for you. Buddhism puts you at the controls and says, and this is radical, everything comes from the mind. Everything comes from your mind. Okay? So suddenly it's a lot of responsibility. And I can't blame it on somebody else, that there's somebody separate, there's this God. But these are simply, these are beings, in a sense. People ask me, who do you pray to in Buddhism? And you can pray to any of these beings and ask for help. So at a certain level of realization, there is actually a living Buddha in these tankas, in these paintings. That's what someone at high level realization would see. For us, we see a nice picture, but in some ways to think there is an actual living being there that is enlightened, that is omniscient, all-knowing, like that, and then they represent different things. So I may be repeating a lot for most of you, but like here's the green Tara, okay? And they all have different purposes. There's, I'm just looking, is that a wealth deity over there? Can't quite see. That one over there, Donna?
Yeah.
Is that a Zambala or something?
I think it's a protector.
Oh, that's a protector, okay. I'm looking for, let me see if there's, the blue, you know, the dark blue one is a medicine Buddha. So people have, need healing practice. You're waiting with somebody in the hospital. You're visiting somebody in the hospital. Somebody's about to have tests in the hospital or they're sick. Then you want to ask him for help. And there's a mantra for him. There's a saying that connects you more to him. There's a practice, if you have more time, that you can do. There's a Buddha back there. The second one in, is that Manjushri? It's hard to see. Okay, so he's got a sword. So the sword cuts delusion. It cuts anything that prevents you from seeing emptiness directly. That's his job. He's about wisdom. So if you want wisdom, he has his own mantra, and you can do various practices with Manjushri involved that help you deepen your wisdom. Okay. So initially we go, I don't know if I buy that, and that was my take. I wasn't sure about any of this, but you try something. Some of you have already tried, and you somehow, you have some experience, some little shift in your mind, and then it deepens your faith. Understand? Make sense? Is that some of your experience? Yeah, some of you, yeah. As Lama Yeshe would say, I never met Lama Yeshe, I never had the good fortune, but I've watched a lot of his videos, read his books, and I lived at a place that was a very special place for him, so all the older students were always telling me stories about Lama Yeshe. And he used to say, are we communicating? Communicating? You know, very nice like that. Okay. Lojong. So I want to give you a little history of these special teachings. And what I'm planning to do is we're going to, you have some handouts just to familiarize you with what you have. Oh, this is so nice. She did all the, thank you so much, Donna. This is great. Oh, great. We even got the right one. Wonderful. Okay. So what's nice is you mostly hear teachings on the eight verses. And some people say, oh, the eight verses. And what they mean is the eight verses of thought transformation, sometimes called the eight verses of mind training. It's the same. Geshe Langri Tangpa. Okay? And then there's a second one, the 7 points of mind training. There happen to be actually about 500 Lojong books and texts and things like that, mind training. And a lot of Buddhism is directed in this way, because this is the whole point, is to transform your mind into something positive. Okay, so we're going to talk about these. But you're used to the eight verses, and I think you've been having courses on this, or you've been doing a lot. So a lot of people hear about the eight verses. But what happens is, I don't know how much we meditate on the eight verses. Do you do some of that? Meditation? Okay. So what I wanted to show you with this, you see the one with the picture that you have? Or some of you have. Thank you for giving those out if you don't have. Great. What I wanted to show you then is, how do I use this in everyday practice? And this is a meditation that you can do, and you can just either build it into your own practice, or for those of you that don't have a practice, a lot of people ask me, I want to start to do something. What do I do? So if this resonates with you, this is a beautiful practice to deepen compassion, okay? And it does tremendously work with the mind, because I've incorporated the eight verses in this practice. So it's a really nice way. And actually, I'm sorry, I didn't do it. Rinpoche's really put this together. But I really like to bring this into Lojong courses, because we talk about the eight verses. We talk about the commentary, what does it mean? But then people kind of put it to the side and they don't really look at it again. So this is a version of the Buddha of Compassion, as many of you know. Avalokiteshvara in Sanskrit, Chenrezig in Tibetan, and this is the thousand-armed version of the Buddha of Compassion. He's over here. Oh, yeah. Okay. So there's another picture there. That's a famous standard picture. And do you have a forearm version of Chenrezig? You don't? That's okay. No worries. There's another one, a thousand-arm. Okay, so you have some nice thousand-arm Buddhas here. Fantastic. So what I was going to say is Chenrezig, as many of you know, exists on many levels. There's a simple forearm version. He's got two hands like this and two here. Thousand arms, so he can reach out to all the different beings needing help. Every hand has an eye, so the eyes see all the different areas that need help. And any practice involving him often is about building compassion. So last summer we did a Nungne, and we were doing it to this version of Chenrezig. You do different sessions visualizing this version. So this will be used when we practice the eight verses, and we're going to do that practice. We'll do some of that tomorrow. And then what we're going to do is look at the 7 points of mind training more thoroughly. So we're not going to spend a lot of time on the eight verses because you've heard it again and again. The 7 points, I don't know how many, have you been through all the slogans? Mind training slogans? Not so much. So this is the key, because this is the practicality of how do I really incorporate mind training. Can I incorporate it into everyday life? So one of them I just mentioned, place all the blame on one. That's one of the slogans. I find it really practical. So you get irritated, and the jerk at work is bothering you, and you're having a snit with your partner, and your kid is driving you crazy, and, you know, then you're in traffic. How are you in traffic? How do you do in traffic? Pretty good? And suddenly there's a little nervous twitter through the room. Mm-hmm. Some of you get irritated when you get behind the wheel of a car. Somebody's back there going, mm-hmm. Okay. I'm amazed at people when some of the nicest, sweetest people I know, as soon as they get behind the wheel of a car, it's like Jekyll and Hyde. You know, they're so... it's a great space to, and you want to blame everybody else out there. Everybody's irritating you and getting in front of you and not signaling and tailgating you, whatever. Place all the blame on one. Just use it. You can put that on the dashboard of your car. It's not about anybody else. It's me and my mind. And if I'm irritated right now, the cause has to be in my mind. That's what Tibetan Buddhism says. This is about you taking responsibility for your mind. Not labeling that you're a bad person because you make mistakes, but, you know, when a negative thing starts floating across your horizon, okay, I'm just going to watch it. I'm doing the best I can. But right now, there's irritation. There's sadness. You know, there's pride in my mind. There's jealousy in my mind. You just watch it. You don't have to get overly involved with it. It's a natural state of the human mind to have these delusions. I just saw the couple from Florida. I know you moved over here. We miss you in Florida, but they're happy that you're here. Nice to see different people show up. Okay, so let me give you a little history. So then we're going to go through the mind training slogans more in depth with some nice commentary from a couple different points I've pulled in, especially Pema Chodron. She has some fantastic stuff in her books about mind training. One of her books you're probably very familiar with, The Places That Scare You, is a mind training book. So again, there's many, many books, and I'll mention some of these books throughout. And there's some newer books that I was just reading that are nice. Let me give you these books just as a little preempter. She came out with a new book, which is just basically about mind training again. Wait, come back. Okay. And it's called... Okay. You ready for the title? It's pretty simple. Some of you may have read this. Always maintain a joyful mind and other Lojong teachings on awakening, compassion, and fearlessness. What do you think of that? Isn't that just what we need right now in the world? Again, always maintain a joyful mind. That sounds pretty good to me. Okay? But and other Lojong teachings on awakening compassion, fantastic. But she adds, and fearlessness. So when you transform your mind into something glorious, you're no longer afraid. And so her previous book, this is kind of a synopsis of the previous book in some ways. Her previous book is The Places That Scare You. So a lot of people I know have fear now. There's a lot of fear coming up from, and we know that younger people right now, and there are some younger people here, which is great. I enjoy dialoguing with them. We had an interesting dialogue in Florida recently with a woman, and we were talking about why are so many younger people filled with anxiety and depression. It seems to be like a new plague on younger people right now in the West. So quite sad. And so we've been discussing it, you know, and a number of people come to classes that, and sometimes I work with people individually of how to combat that. You don't always have to sit in the rut of anxiety and depression. The beginning is waking up to what's going on in the mind. But and one of the interesting things one of these people said was, I think she's around 22, I think, something like that, 22 or 23. And she was saying recently that there's a little bit of a movement. I don't know how many of you would agree with this, but it's kind of cool to be stressed and have anxiety and depression. So if your peer group is kind of exploring that and doing that, and you're kind of always maintaining a joyful mind, if I can quote the book, you're not cool. You're not kind of in the vogue with them. So that's also the peer pressure that kids get, I think. And that made a lot of sense as well. I could see that happening. You know, why are you happy all the time? We're all morose over here. So what's the deal? You know, you want to be with us? You want to be friends with us? So I could see that bit of pressure being there. And we all know about, what's the words I want to say, they're kind of adages, but they're like sayings that start, expressions that we start repeating. And when you repeat them, they become more concretized. For instance, I went through a space when I was running a center in California, and then there were a lot of Dharma students there and a lot of people working at two big retreat centers in our organization, like full-time staff at these centers. And we were all burnt out. Remember those words? I'm burnt out, and she's burnt out, he's so burnt out. We were just all burnt out. So it's like we didn't even know what we were saying, but you just say it because that's what everybody's saying. You know, and sometimes you'd show up and somebody'd say, oh, you look really burnt out right now. And then you'd feel burnt out then as soon as they said that. When in the morning I woke up and I felt that I was maintaining a joyful mind, but now you look at me and you tell me, you know, I look like I'm burnt out, so now I'm burnt out. I mean, it does work that way. So I could see that being kind of a trajectory for people. So that's one book, Always Maintain a Joyful Mind, fantastic title. And there's another new book I discovered. Wait. I was like, not the novels I'm reading, sorry. Okay, Barbara Kingsolver, all right, we'll have to hold that one. Sorry, Rinpoche. Rinpoche's always, one of my friends once, he walked past a nun friend of mine in California, and I guess she had a book, and Rinpoche said, oh, what, you know, he always gets you, right, when you're, and he said, oh, what book is that? And Rinpoche doesn't waste any time. Never wastes a mote, not one piece of his life, nothing is wasted. And so she said, oh, it's a crime novel. I mean, you know, we need a break too, nuns, you know, we have to. She said, it's a crime novel. She said, he didn't really understand. She said, and he said, is it true? And she said, no, Rinpoche, it's a story that, and he said, a story that's not true? He's like, why? Like, why, but, you know. So sometimes I read novels and I'm like, sorry. Okay, here's the next title. Sorry. I love this title. You ready? This is Lojong text. Let me give you the byline first. Using Buddhist mind training to free yourself from painful emotional patterns. That sounds pretty good to me. Okay? And here's the title. Stop biting the tail you're chasing. Stop biting the tail you're chasing. Anyen Rinpoche and Alison Chuying Zongmo. This is a little bit more based in, I think, Kagyu tradition, but some nice things in there as well. But so Pema Chodron, I really love when she gets into fearlessness. And Lama Zopa Rinpoche does provide us, does try so much to get us to this place in training the mind, in walking through a space where you are developing the good heart. In that space, it's harder and harder to hold on to your fear when you are developing the good heart. Rinpoche is all about this. And all you have to do is couple that with the right view, emptiness, and you have nothing to fear anymore because you're much more understanding the nature of reality. As Lama would say, you're touching reality and you're experiencing, as Lama Yeshe would say, totality, heart. When your heart is that wide open, and I remember years ago in California when I was living there, and I worked really hard for this center, so for a few centers actually, but one for a long time, and I would get burnt out. Okay, and I remember I went to this, a number of us went to this chiropractor, but he was really more like a healer, and he used to kind of put me back together in straight, you know, ways, and he'd always have some astute line of something he'd say to me while I was like on the table, and it was a very interesting guy. He's still there practicing, and so at one point we were talking about how overwhelmed I was by the work, and I was working too hard, and then he said, you know, and how there were so many people coming to our centers, and you're constantly interacting with people. But again, if you're on the Mahayana Buddhist path, that's our job. Our job is to interact and have as many healthy relationships with beings as possible. That's what we want to do. But as a human being, I'm limited. So after a while, I'm like, I need a break. You know, I need a moment. And when I didn't get it, I would just get so overwhelmed. And he said, well, he goes, you have two options. And I found it very dharmic. And he said, you either end up shutting off here, closing this up because you need to protect. And this happens in the face of fear. We like, whoa, you know, you're too close to me, or I don't understand what that is over there, you know, or it looks like you're attacking my kid. Or so this closes up. And he said, the other option is you just open up entirely and then it doesn't matter anymore. Okay. But again, if we're going to open up entirely, you have to invest your wisdom in it. You're not opening up stupidly and putting yourself in a dangerous situation as a limited being, but you want to use your wisdom and grow your wisdom so eventually you open your heart with more and more of that wisdom informing it, informing your activities. Make sense? Make sense? But then the fearlessness starts to subside because I'm showing up with the best I have and I make mistakes, but I'm still doing the best I can. You can't do any more than that, right? So I think for most of us, what's helpful is to first just relax, and really capital R, relax. It's not really common in our culture, is it, to relax? How many of you feel like you have a good balance in life? I'm just curious. How many people? Okay? Not very many people, right? Right? Isn't this our situation? So thank you. For those of you that put your hand up, thank you for working to maintain a balance. It's not easy. But a lot of people don't have their hand up, and so we're pressed down one way or another. Things, and you know, and then the mind starts spinning out of control, then maybe we start externally blaming. Then I get dug in deeper, not happy. I mean, it goes on. And then anxiety and depression, all the other negativities forming. It's natural. So you can definitely look and rebalance and look at what, you know, the beginning is the awareness with our mind. What's going on with your mind? So some of you good at looking at your mind? Are you comfortable with that? Right? So some of you are not. Okay, so the beginning is gentle. You know, you're just observing. Just observing. It's not a contest. You're not in competition with anybody. Nobody's going to grade you on it. It's you just being honest with yourself. Some of you are great. I think age lends to that. Age lends to a comfort. So with relax, it's not a word we're really comfortable with. And I've been exploring it myself. So I led this pilgrimage to Laudo. I was talking about it, I think, the last time I came. And we had the most extraordinary time. It was one of the richest things I've done in this life. I've had an incredible life, but we went to Laudo. It's near Mount Everest. There's a remote retreat center there. I've done a lot of retreat. Rinpoche has a holy cave there. His sister and brother were there. And we did a three-day retreat. So we did a trek. We got up there. And at the end, I came down with everybody. And then 4 days later, I went back up to do about 5 weeks retreat. And then it got a little bit too cold. And when I came back to the States 3 months later, I was really, my body was really kind of wrecked. You know, I'm a little older now, and it takes longer to recover. So I went to the doctor, and I had shingles. You know, I was really, like, not in great shape, and Kathmandu's polluted. So I get these upper respiratory problems, and it takes a long time till they go away. But it's not enough to prevent me from going, because it's so great to go, and there's many holy things to see and do there, and I really wanted to lead these people up there. And Rinpoche had asked about trying to bring people up to support Laudo. But it took me a while, and I went to a couple doctors, and it was like Rinpoche doesn't really rest. He doesn't really know the word break. I don't think there's a word in his vocabulary to take a break. But these doctors kept saying, you know, you need rest. You need to rest. And so I looked at that, because I'm not a great rester. But I've been working my way into it, you know, and I feel much better now. Totally. But it really was almost like, for some of you, it's like you're squeezing some, you know, you're really not used to this, so you're forcing at times. But it's helpful, and through the rest, I think, comes a level of relaxation for the mind that you need in meditation. Really, really helpful. So I find easier for me when I do meditate, we've done this before in here, where I lead people slowly in for like 5 minutes, first with some preliminary things before you're even meditating, before you're more formally meditating. Okay, and I find that period, 5 or 10 minutes, is essential because you need to first relax. You can't just sit down on a cushion and expect that now I'm going to be really concentrated. So people give up really quickly. They race in from work, and they're supposed to have a meditation practice, or they get up in the morning early, and they want to have this practice, but they're jamming. So what if you just sat for 5 minutes in the beginning and just notice what floats by the mind? You know, you might start a motivation there, and you're just noticing, and then you might go to your breathing. You might check your posture a little bit. And, you know, have this time to just unwind. Unwind your mind a little bit. And then see what comes. See what arises. I find much, much more helpful that way. Does it make sense? You know, so overall, like, the meditation comes more organically when you're relaxed. When you're relaxed. So in that space of relaxation, you're maybe better able to watch your mind. And just watch, so that if a delusion arises, like I just mentioned, you might note, oh, there's irritation. You know, I don't have to get involved with it. I don't have to say I'm an irritated person, but I'm watching irritation in my mind right now. In fact, I'm going to watch it. Why? I'm going to watch it so that it doesn't get to anger. It just remains there. Irritation's a lesser degree of anger, as is frustration and annoyance. So why not catch it at annoyance? You're annoyed with somebody? Why don't you just watch it there, and then you yourself can learn and apply the techniques and antidotes before it's full-blown anger. That's how we transform our mind. Okay, so then we'll look at the 7 points with the slogans in depth. We will do some practice with the 8 verses. And then, if we have time, I'm going to introduce a third Lojong text that has just interesting ways of looking at how happiness also hooks us, an overpresence of wanting and wanting and wanting happiness all the time can be a problem. So how do we work with that? How do we more welcome problems as well? So let me talk a little bit about some history with some of the main two Lojong texts. And then we'll take some questions too. So initially it was secret, and I'm talking now about the 8 verses and the 7 points, the two main texts that you have here. 8 verses and the 7 points. It was initially secret, and the reason it's secret, let's just turn right now to the 8 verses. 8 verses of thought transformation, just the one sheet. I want you to look at number 5. This is one of the famous lines of it. Let's read this together. When out of envy others mistreat me with abuse, insults, or the like, I shall accept defeat and offer the victory to others. I'm just curious. I know some of you have studied this. What do you think about that line? Just as a first pass, what do you think about that line? Does it work for you? Is it alarming? Is it surprising? Is it fine? Does it work in your life? Are you living like that? It's hard? What's that? It's hard to do it, isn't it? It's hard to do it, right? So imagine that. Offer the victory to others. People criticize you sometimes, right? Somebody talks about you behind your back, or you get into a little snit with somebody, maybe a bigger one, some disagreement. Some of you may have family relationships, and you haven't talked to that brother or parent or whomever for like 5 years. There was a fight, something happened, and a lot of times people don't even remember what happened, right? You know, why you're not talking anymore, okay? This is the exercise, offer the victory to others. It's alarming for some people. You know, some people are dug in. There's no way. I was right, they say. I was right. Why should I? Okay. So what happened is this particular line, Geshe Langri Tangpa lived, I'm never very good with my dates. Let me see if I have any dates on him, unless somebody knows. Oh. So usually this teaching, one of the things, goes back over 800 years, following an introduction of the Kadampa school by Master Atisha, when Langri Tangpa set down the 8 verses. Okay. And it explains a practice of method and wisdom. The first 7 verses deal with method. Okay. This is our way to get enlightened. Bodhicitta. Sanskrit term again, enlightened attitude. Bodhi is enlightenment, citta is mind. The mind of enlightenment is I want to get enlightened to benefit all living beings. It's always about cherishing others more than yourself. Okay? So the first 7 verses of the 8 verses deal with that, and the 8th talks about brings in wisdom, emptiness. I'm going to go back to that in a second. So the 5th verse that we just read, it was on some kind of scrap or some wasted paper, and it came upon a lama named Geshe Chikawa. I was just looking for the... Whoops. Okay. Geshe Chikawa, who I have the dates for him, 1100s. So he found verse 5 at his monastery, I don't know, very far away, I think, from where Geshe Langri Tangpa lived, who lived some centuries before. Okay, so I guess it was around 900 or 1000 or something like that before. So went out of envy. So he was so impressed with this, offer the victory to others. He couldn't imagine. He was like, how do you do that? You get pissed off with somebody. So what he did is he went on a search to find the author of the verse to study with him. And when he got to the monastery, found out it was Geshe Langri Tangpa, got to the monastery, and then one of the main disciples of Geshe Langri Tangpa, Geshe Sharawa, told him that Geshe Langri Tangpa had passed away. So Geshe Sharawa said, I'll teach you the verse, and explained. And then Geshe Chikawa wrote the 7 points as a commentary on the 8 verses. So that's how those two are connected. And then from Master Atisha, he wrote all the slogans, mind training slogans that we're going to talk about. There's, I think, 52 of them. Okay, so a little bit more on the history. So originally, it comes from Buddha Shakyamuni, okay? And then the Buddha gave teachings on great compassion. They were passed down to like Arya, Sangha, Master Nagarjuna. From these masters, the teachings were passed down to Master Shantideva, which is bringing it a little bit more current. We've heard of him. We know more about him. Shantideva emphasized, he expanded, he reiterated on the thoughts on compassion by the Buddha, and then he put it into words that he felt was easier for people to understand. Some of you have read sutras or discourses of the Buddha, and often they're quite hard to understand. It's in a different language. It was a different time. 2,600 years ago is really different than 800 AC, 700 AC, around when Shantideva came along. Okay? So then he put it in words, and what's kind of neat now is all of us here in this room are pioneers now for bringing the Dharma to the West, in America, in this case, in North Carolina. That's what Kadampa Center's here to do. So in a sense, Geshe Gelek has come here to pass on his lineage of a high-level Geshe, PhD equivalent, and he's giving you more traditional teachings like that. And then you have some Western teachers in your own culture that are kind of saying, yeah, I was a regular girl from Philadelphia, and this is what I did, like that. So we learn from different sources slowly, and then you yourself will pass it on, whether it's your kids, some of you are teaching that are already here, and how you're going to work on what moved your mind. So better to talk from experience, right? From your own experiences of how you came to the Dharma and what is moving your mind, because that will resonate more with people from your culture, okay? But we're not trying to dilute it too much, okay? We're not taking it away from the Dharma, okay? So Master Shantideva ended up putting it into his words. And so teachings on the 8 verses thought transformation, as it was synthesized and commented on, arose from Master Shantideva's Bodhicharyavatara, which is, in some translations, the guide to the Bodhisattva's way of life, or some people translate it as the way of the Bodhisattva. I think many of you are familiar with that text. It's fantastic. And he talks about, in that book, the development of bodhicitta, the development of compassion. And then he passed it down to Lama Tsurlingpa. Okay? Lama Tsurlingpa and Lama Atisha. And Lama Tsurlingpa, or Master Tsurlingpa, I believe, came from Indonesia. Thank you. Indonesia, that's where I was looking for. And his reincarnation is Dagri Rinpoche today, who lives today and travels our centers, also called Pari Rinpoche. He lives at His Holiness's temple most of the time in Dharamsala. He's my age, and he's delightful. So he does travel to the West. I'm trying to think the last time he was in the States, last year or the year. Yeah, he came to Shanti Davis Center last year, and fantastic teacher. So in a sense, they're alive among us, too. It's not like they're somebody that, they actually are living, breathing beings, if we can identify the reincarnations like that. Lama Tisha went to Tibet from India, spread the teachings all over Tibet, and of his disciples, Lama Atisha, passed his teachings to a great master, Drom Thompa, okay, who passed teachings to disciples. And the chief among Drom Thompa's disciples were Geshe Potawa, Geshe Chikawa, and Geshe Langri Thangpa. So that's how they suddenly, these verses come to give you the whole thing. So Geshe Langri Thangpa actually received teachings directly from Master Drom Thompa. And until then, the teachings were not practiced publicly, but were only passed down to a few qualified disciples. And then he thought it would be really tragic if the teachings were lost, and then he recorded and wrote down the 8 verses. And it was the first time they were written down before he passed away. Prior to that, the teachings were only given orally. So they talk about the Tibetan tradition, as many of you know, and they talk about an ear-whispered tradition. And what it means is you have to hear the teaching directly in front of the person live from their mouth to your ears, a lot of the teachings. And it used to be like that. Now I have heard, for instance, that if in dire circumstances, I remember a lama was dying in Singapore of cancer, and Lama Zopa Rinpoche gave him an initiation on the telephone. But again, it was from the lips to the ear live, but not with the person in front. But apparently, obviously at their levels, I'm sure it was fine. There were questions about could you get an initiation from a cassette in the old days when we had cassette recordings, and they were saying not, it didn't really count. But now we have live streaming. So people are saying, does that count? And I've heard a mixed thing of yes and no, where if you're really concentrating on it and you're there and you watch the entire thing, possibly, depending. But I think a lot of it also always depends on your level of realization and things like that. And
in 2016, when the Dalai Lama gave Kalachakra at Bodh Gaya, and the Chinese revoked all of the visas, Tibetan visas, and mm-hmm. said, mm-hmm. if you don't come home immediately,
yes,
you might not like what happens to your families, and also then refused to give visas, the Dalai Lama, just at the first day of the teachings, announced that that everything would be being streamed, and anyone who had access to seeing them and hearing them,
yes,
and made the commitment to receive the initiation, would receive the initiation.
Yes, and I remember that, and I wasn't there, but I remember hearing that, because I think the main thing is dependent also on the teacher, on the guru that gives it. So somebody with His Holiness's breath of life and that level of realization saying that, then no problem. So I think there's always a debate if it's not a teacher exactly like him who doesn't say that, it's hard to say, but when he says that, then I think absolutely.
So I just meant there's precedent.
Yes. Yeah, no, it's happening, that I think it definitely, and it is wonderful that teachers like His Holiness, teachers like Lama Zopa Rinpoche, are live streaming all the time, so it's not that you have to travel to India, which is very difficult for people, and, you know, expensive for people as well. And this way, you know, if you're willing to get up and, you know, late at night or stay up, you can watch things. And sometimes they're in Europe, which is closer, time zone closer, and sometimes in different parts of the States. So if you have that interest, you can watch segments. And you can also re-watch them if it's not live, and you can go back on and watch it like that. So that might have a different level if it's not live, but again, teachings are teachings, so it's not that you necessarily have to be there at the moment to get something, but you can still listen to a live stream teaching and get quite a lot out of that. So it's fantastic. So part of the secrecy of it, you have to understand, with Lojong teachings, honestly, I wouldn't leave here and go out and then tell your non-Dharma friend, like, you know, well, Buddhism says offer the victory to others. People don't understand if they don't have a basis, honestly. So what I also found with my own Buddhist career, in a sense, if I could say career, initially I got all excited the first year, and I had found something that was really speaking to me. And so I had a few close friends that I was like, hey, you know, you got to come to this teaching with me. This is it. This is the thing. And then they were a little skeptical, and they were, you know, a little nervous about it. And then they would start to ask me questions, but I started spewing things to them about karma and emptiness and things, but I didn't understand anything. So the things I was spewing were not really correct. And so people would get confused, and they said, so I'd have friends saying to me, so you mean you're going to come back as a horse? Like that you're, and they, you know, and I'd be like, well, no, it's not like that. So then it gets confusing, and then it turns people off. So if you come up to somebody and start talking to them about Tonglen meditation, which we're also going to do this weekend, Tonglen meditation, taking and giving, very profound part of Lojong teachings. And if you go out and you're like, oh, we should just take all the suffering on of everyone else and give them happiness, people think you're crazy. So again, what I found works better with the Dharma is if you found a jewel and you're happy with the Dharma and you like these teachings and they're working for you, and again, please, anything I'm saying, don't just accept what I'm saying. Please investigate thoroughly what I'm saying. Really check up yourself. Is it true what she's saying? How does it fit in your own life? You really have to do that work in this tradition, and I really like that this tradition because of that. Because nobody was ramming it down my throat. They're really like, you need to investigate and check up like this. Does that verse work for you? Let me see how it works in my mind. So I found that if once I just started to practice a little bit and started a little bit changing my mind, if I could, but then you become an example. And that gets your friends' attention more than anything else. So if people aren't that interested, but I start spewing about them taking on people's suffering, giving them happiness, and you know, offer the victory, and everything comes from the mind, doesn't come from Jesus or God or Mother Teresa, you're stupid. You know, it doesn't work like that. You know, that people get turned off, and they don't want to talk to you anymore. So if you don't say anything, and you're just leading a good life, and you have a more open heart, and they're noticing you're kinder, and maybe you're a little more patient, and a little more naturally giving, like, that gets people's attention. And then they come, and they're like, what were you doing at that monastery? And then I had friends that asked me, and then I knew they were interested. Or I'll put it this way, they didn't need to be Buddhists, but when they started to ask me questions, then I knew they were listening. Where before you're spewing all this stuff about karma, things, they're not interesting. They're just like, what movie do you want to go to? what are you telling me? So again, this can be your own little secret jewel, and if you're here as a couple or you're here with friends, great. You talk to your friends about it. And that's why Kadampa Center, that's why centers are great, because you come to a like-minded community, and then you can discuss it there and build on it and learn from your peers. Okay? Then you're a little clearer when people do ask you questions outside like that. So that's why initially they were secret, but both Geshe Langri Tangpa and Geshe Chikawa felt they're going to disappear if we don't have the right people that we're saying them to, if they're not recorded, and they decided to record them. Fortunately for us. Very fortunately for us. Okay, and then, so once Geshe Chikawa got the teachings from Geshe Sarawa, or Geshe Sharawa, they say both names, then he started to teach it openly to others. And from him, the teachings passed down to a long line of teachers until it reached Lama Tsongkhapa, our patron saint, 14th century, and then Kabji Pabongka Rinpoche was passed to him, who was a more contemporary lama. Kabji Pabongka Rinpoche, as most of you know, brought us Liberation in the Palm of Your Hands, that kind of our Lamrim Bible, and from a teaching that was given, I believe, in 1945. And then who was at the teaching who recorded Liberation in the Palm of Your Hand was His Holiness Trijon Rinpoche. His Holiness Trijon Rinpoche, in his last life, was the junior tutor to His Holiness the Dalai Lama, and he passed it to His Holiness the Dalai Lama. And I have received this teaching from His Holiness the Dalai Lama, and also Lama Zopa Rinpoche. So that's our whole application of the history of how it got here. But unfortunately, I don't teach with any realizations, as all of these other masters have. So you're going to get my limited perspective. But I'll certainly do the best I can. But again, please check up on what I'm saying. And if something is working for you, build on that, develop that, and fold that into your practice. If it's not working for you, just put it to the side like that. So how does it work in daily life? The application I find in daily life, if you wish to overcome disturbing emotions, unhappiness, self-hatred, denial, insecurities, wrong views, this is all the real enemy for you. This is the real enemy. This is what Lojong starts to turn your mind to. There's nothing out there doing it to you. Okay? Then you want to apply these teachings. If I really want to make a change with those things, I have to start identifying that's the problem. That's the only problem. And applying these teachings. The teachings can thoroughly change you. If you combine this practice, again, with a deity-type practice, meaning an emanation of the enlightened mind in some degree, and we're going to do this with, we're going to do this in tomorrow with Thousand Arm Chin Rasik. So those of you that aren't used to doing a deity practice, sometimes called yidam in Sanskrit, yidam, it simply can forge for you a closer relationship with that aspect of the enlightened mind. Again, some people like to do visualization like that and recite a certain mantra. It can be really nice like that. People do that with Tara. They do it with Manjushri, anything like that, Medicine Buddha, like that. So then it can be even more beneficial. Because just reciting the eight verses is one thing, but actually using it with a Buddha of compassion, and you can dissolve light in you, seems to have an effect, positive effect on the mind, I've found. You have to check yourself, okay? This is a practice, honestly, that can heal the planet. I really believe that, okay? It can restore environments. It can bless all the beings on the earth. Okay? So when people get rid of selfishness, the way they treat the earth, the way they treat people around them, can very much transform, can be very healing. Okay? So when people accomplish these teachings, their anger, their expectations, their wrong views can transform into something totally embracing everyone around them with love and genuine kindness like that. So the teachings work for old people, they work for young people. If you're a new Buddhist, they work for you. If you've been around for years, it's a great way to refresh. They work for people from the East, people from the West, whether you've got dull faculties or whether you're really bright, okay? It's actually that simple of a practice to some degree. So obviously if you're more astute, it'll work better. But there's some practices, I know people say, I don't really understand emptiness, I don't have any interest in reading the books. Great, it can be for people with more in-depth intelligence and things like that. But Lojong teachings, incredibly practical for everybody. And it's nice because it's like welcoming the change that you'll see, that you can become. I find when your inner world changes, the outer world follows. The outer world changes. And why again? Because Buddhism says everything comes from the mind. Mind, my internal experience, okay, is creating what is showing on that external movie screen of my life, like that. So, talking about motivation for a moment. Our minds initially, and we talk about motivation so much in here, you've heard this over and over again, you've heard this word again and again, motivation, okay? Our minds are not transforming because our motivation is incorrect. What do you think about motivation? How does it work in your life? I'm curious. How's it going every day? Yes? Yes, sometimes you have it, sometimes you don't. Thank you. Right? So this is the beginning of the thing is, can you, and we've talked about this before in here, when you wake up in the morning, when you wake up in the morning, lying in bed, you're waking up. Okay? How many of you are new to any of new to me that I've never met before? You haven't been here before. Okay, so very few. You've heard some of this before. So when you wake up in the morning, whether alarm or naturally, you're in bed, waking up. What's going on for you? Waking thoughts. What's happening? Your to-do list. Okay, some people have to-do lists. What else is going on? Sorry? Emails. I got to do emails, right? Are you doing emails in your head?
Tea.
Tea, right? What else? What else? Coffee. More sleep. I want more sleep.
Dreams.
Cold and I don't want to get out of bed. Okay. Wait, so just explore for a moment. Okay, let's explore. Waking moments, we're ordinary beings. Okay? Look how self-serving. Isn't it? I'm just being honest with myself. So I have this moment, and I've talked about this before, my little waking in-bed practice when I wake up. Okay? But those first initial waking moments for me is about me, myself, and I. It just is. You know, can I turn it more quickly now, a little bit more quickly to a good motivation? I can, but those first waking moments of my ordinary human mind, it's like, what's happening for me waking up? Me, 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 me. Oh, sentient beings, right? But I'm just being honest, you know, so you want to watch. You want to see coffee, I want to have a shower, I want to have my list. Okay, so please give yourself a break. This is the beginning of your day. Please give yourself a break. I know it takes effort, okay? You might notice the lists and the this, and I got to do, you know, and you have all day for your lists. You have all day for your lists. So why does it have to be in bed with you right at that moment? The rest of your day is your lists. Why not get my mind as open and balanced and peaceful and benevolent as possible so I can tackle my list from that motivation? That I look at my list from my motivation. Mahayana motivation is all about fully waking up to benefit all living beings. It's that simple. Becoming a Buddha, which is fully waking up, but the real purpose, to benefit all living beings. Because as a Buddha, I benefit them perfectly, unlimitedly. Okay? That's what you want to get going. That's what you want to start exercising, those waking moments, is first that. But I actually, what I do, and I've mentioned this before, is I have in my Amy, me happening, I have this suddenly succulence and relishing my precious human life. My waking moments. You wake up in a comfortable bed, right? For the most part. And you're safe. And you have shelter. Right? These are the basics. Well, I'm so happy for that. I let it wash. I'm really like, thank you. Thank you. Because I just came back from a country where it wasn't like that for a lot of people in that country. Life isn't comfortable at all in Nepal. Many people, it's one of the poorest countries on the planet. They have struggled and struggled. I just watched the country continue to struggle all the years I went there. It's a fascinating, wonderful country. Oh, and commercial break, sorry. The next pilgrimage, if you want to join us, is May 2020. We're going back to Laodo. Another retreat. May 2020. You're going, right? Okay. You guys are going, right? Karen's just like automatic pilot. She's it would be fantastic. We had a wonderful, wonderful time. We had a wonderful group. So it's fantastic. So please have some succulents about the circumstances of your life waking up. It balances everything. We take it for granted. You take your clothes for granted. You take relatively clean air to breathe for granted. Relatively clean water to drink. Okay? In Nepal, you can't drink water out of the tap ever. Ever. It's terribly polluted with stuff. It'll make you really sick. Okay? So I still marvel. You know, I'm in the kitchen, my dad's house, put the tap on. I'm still like, you just drink. Yeah. It makes me smile. I'm just like, this is too easy. But I'm in bed now thinking about these things. Just go through a few circumstances. Whether you're happy with your education, you like your clothes, you have a nice partner, you have food in the refrigerator. You know, you like your car, whatever. It's fantastic. Right? And you probably have a well-functioning body and mind. Do you know what a luxury that is? How many people on the planet are sick? How many can't walk? How many have chronic diabetes? And how many have cancer? And, you know, but from relatively well-functioning body and mind is a huge luxury. Please celebrate it right from the beginning in the morning. 1 or 2 minutes, that's it. But what about, and then the next moment is your good qualities. Please reflect on your good qualities. Because too many people in America, in the United States, suffer from low self-esteem, which contributes to depression and anxiety and fear. It does. Okay, you have many good qualities. You're just not used to reflecting on them. So again, if you notice negative qualities coming in and that's what you're focused on, that's a distraction. Excuse me. Just imagine in your mind moving them away. That's not what I'm focusing on now. I know there's some limitations I have and I make mistakes. I'm aware of that. But right now, I'm just going to have a little moment, 1 minute, of focusing on some of my good qualities. 2 minutes of that. I mean, just this is all 2 minutes right now, all of that. And then the next moment, some reflection on death and impermanence. This wonderful situation I have is quickly ending. So I'm not using this to paralyze myself, the concept of death. I'm using it to motivate my practice. So the fact that I have another day, then set your motivation. I have another day. I want life to be meaningful. And can I direct the activities of my body, speech, and mind towards something positive? It's going to get me fully awake. It's going to get me enlightened. It's going to get me to be a Buddha. However, put it in your own words, whatever you want to say. Why? So I can benefit all living beings. Now I'm going to get out of bed with that motivation. I'm getting out of bed to benefit all living beings. That's the purpose of why I'm getting out of bed. That's the purpose why I'm having my coffee, having my shower, going to the bathroom, going to work, anything. See the difference? Like, wake up with some kind of meaning like that. I find it so useful in my life. So useful in life to start the training there. To start the mind transformation there. Possible? I know some of you are already doing it. That's your exercise for tomorrow morning. Okay? So if you're coming back, please try that exercise if you're not already doing it. You can even do it when you go to sleep tonight. We have to sleep. We need rest for our body to be healthy. I'd like to be healthy because I'd like to wake up tomorrow healthy, rested, so I can do whatever my activities are that are going to help me become enlightened more quickly so I can benefit all living beings. So really, for the point of benefiting all living beings, I'm going to practice the yoga of sleeping. Then you sleep. Then sleep more virtuous. Make sense? Let me see a little bit more with motivation. So again, our minds are not, these are some of my notes, are not transforming because our motivation is incorrect. Okay? You're going to go through the day. You got the motivation going in the morning. And by 10 o'clock, I lost it. Completely forgot about it. Why? My mind's not habituated enough to think about it. Tibetan Buddhist practice is all about habituating your mind with positive states, with virtue. That's the whole point of meditation. You're completely and basically only familiarizing your mind with virtue in its various forms. That's it. So I forgot by 10 o'clock in the morning, and now that person at work is irritating me so much. I'm going down the tubes. We just had a meeting. I'm going to say it was a horrible meeting, and now I'm in a bad mood, and there you go. And there goes all the other habits that you're normally used to doing, and then you're going to go to this coworker's office, and you're going to talk about that guy with them a little bit, and you're going to build up, and you're doing analytical meditation in the wrong way, and you're going to build up how nasty this person is. Convince myself, why spend your time like that? Why use your speech like that? In the morning, you said, I'm going to direct the activities of my body, speech, and mind towards something positive. Leave notes wherever you work or on, you know, the mirror of your bathroom, something that will remind you, that will bring you back. Oh, motivation. Okay, well, that wasn't great what I just did, but now I'm going to reestablish the motivation. And you can just 2 seconds. That's right. I want to become fully enlightened so I can benefit all living beings. That's right. Take a couple breaths. Use basic mindfulness, breathing. Okay, that meeting was really bad, but I'm okay. I'm okay. It didn't kill me, the meeting. I'm alive. People are challenging. I'm challenging sometimes, so people are challenging. And sometimes in the mindfulness, the basic breathing, maybe you just notice you're uncomfortable. What's the problem with that? You know? People in the United States, more than any culture I teach in, they need to be comfortable all the time. You can't in samsara. It's not possible. It's not how it's designed. I'm sorry. But we want it more than ever. As soon as there's a little discomfort. Our pilgrimage was great. We did have people from the United States on it. Okay? But there were other cultures there. There were other nationalities there. Which was great because they kind of, you know, infiltrated to the United States people to keep them from whining so much, because we whine. With one little snip, you know, this isn't exactly the way, you know. You don't go to Nepal expecting it to be like the United States. If you do, you're going to be miserable. Like that. So no, I'm joking. I mean, we're great in the United States as well. But it is hard when you want this comfort. Look at your mind again. Wanting comfort every moment. Is it realistic? So when I'm not comfortable, take a deep breath. Sometimes I'm at a meeting and I'm like, this is a waste of time. You know, I mean, there'll be things in my mind, I just watch. But again, I'm just going to take a deep breath. And maybe I need a second and a third. And what I do in that time, all of a sudden my motivation comes back. Oh, wait. I want to wake up so I can benefit all living beings. There's all these beings at this meeting with me. Well, I can learn something from somebody. I don't know everything. I'm really limited. And if I think it's a waste of my time, that's just my limited thinking. That's not opening up to learn from people. Suddenly, all of a sudden, the mind opens up, and I'm like, okay again. Or I'm just noticing that I'm uncomfortable, and you know what? That's okay. Life's uncomfortable. And the more I practice with the discomfort, the more comfortable I get with it. It's a lot of spiritual practice, getting comfortable with the uncomfortable. Okay? Because without Lojong, we're uncomfortable, and then we lash out. We don't offer the victory. We don't consider other beings. We don't want to be kind. So this is our basic, this is where we wake up, and it starts with motivation. So sometimes motivation is incorrect, and then as a result we have wrong projections, and we lack merit. We lack positive energy. So incorrect motivation, we want to understand, is impermanent. It's impermanent. And your mind being limited is also impermanent. Your mind doesn't always have to be limited. Everything's changing. Everything's changing. So the fact that I got the wrong motivation and the fact that I have some negative things in my mind, okay, they arise from, Buddhism says, a cause, a preceding cause. The cause is basically ignorance. Ignorance, confusion, and on a deeper level, misknowing. Misknowing. K-N-O-W. Misknow. We misknow things. Okay? We misknow things, and then I think, I need this. You need to do this for me. I don't like what you're saying right now. I don't want to be with this person. I don't like that guy over there. That's misknowing. I'm not understanding that the reason this person's irritating me is the only reason, in fact, is because there's a cause in your consciousness that's creating that. Cause in your mind, preceding cause in your mind, negative, some negative cause got created that's showing me something unpleasant. It's the only reason it's out there, unpleasant like that. Okay? So once you get wisdom, once you have knowledge, deep knowledge, ignorance is cut and positive motivation always arises. Okay? The guideline to develop correct motivation is to get free of the 8 worldly dharmas or 8 worldly concerns. We're going to talk about this more in this weekend. Motivation we should develop, again, is to achieve enlightenment for freedom from suffering for ourselves and others. Eight worldly concerns, and then I'll take some questions. What are the eight worldly dharmas or eight worldly concerns? There's four pairs. What are they? So let's go with number one. What's the first pair? Anybody remember? Okay, we need to talk about these eight worldly dharmas. Okay. One before that. Pain and pleasure. Thank you. Pain and pleasure. Then we go into gain and loss, or loss and gain. Praise and blame. And then number four? Fame and dishonor. I'll say fame. Literally in Tibetan, we've mentioned these before, more literally in Tibetan, being happy when you feel pleasure, being unhappy when you feel pain, being happy when you get something, being unhappy when you lose something or don't get something, gain and loss, being happy when you hear pleasant sounds about you, praise, being unhappy when you hear unpleasant sounds about you, blame. Being happy when you have a good reputation, being unhappy when you have a bad reputation. Okay? These manipulate you, these situations, continually keeping you away from transforming your mind into something positive. So I want you to, tonight, I want you to explore, if you're coming back, I want you to explore how are they working in your life? Do you have a moment when you're free of the eight worldly dharmas? Is there a moment of rest when you're free of the eight worldly dharmas? And how do they work in your mind? Sometimes it's subtle. Okay, now there's one of them, and if you know the answer to this already, this was from Geshe Sopa, who was a professor at Madison, University of Wisconsin for years, one of my teachers and one of Lama Zopa Rinpoche's teachers. He, years ago, I was at a teaching with him about the eight worldly dharmas, and he said there's one that is the worst of the eight. There's the one that keeps you up at night that has you around the throat when it manifests, okay? So if you already heard this from me, this answer, don't say. But if you don't know the answer, if you don't remember, I want you to go home tonight and think about it, and we're going to talk about it tomorrow. If you come back, which is the one that is the worst? And even if you're not here, you can think about which is the one that manipulates you the worst and really starts you spinning in a negative spiral. And think about it. Think about each one. Think about how they work in your life and why you have reasons why you think that one is the worst. Like that. Is everybody clear? Everybody okay? So any questions, please? Okay. On we go. But let me know if you have any questions. Okay. Let me say one other thing. Okay. Lo is mind. Lo in Tibetan. Lo, mind, thought, or attitude. Okay. Zhong, training or transformation. Lo zhong. So in a sense, all the Buddhist teachings are lojong, really. But here we're specifically transforming self-centered mind into an altruistic one. Cherishing others instead of self-cherishing. And we're also, as a second point of lojong, transforming problems into the path. So two very specific things. Transforming that self-centered attitude into an altruistic one, and transforming problems into the path. Again, and I'm sorry, I made a mistake, not 500 Lojong texts. There's about 150. And again, they're very popular. You don't need to be a great scholar to get the meaning. They can be practiced by anyone. And this is from His Holiness the Dalai Lama. There's no need for complicated philosophies. My religion is kindness, from His Holiness. Also, from a practical point of view, these teachings, they bring us much more happiness, and you find that you're happier when you are much more altruistic. But check yourself when you're altruistic. When you're feeling selfish, how's your mind? Are you happy? You have to check, because some people feel that's really the source of the happiness. It's all about them first. Somebody close in my life that really feels that way. And, you know, it's interesting to watch. I mean, it's just how they go through life, you know, that it's all about them. And when they really get stuck in that, sometimes I notice that they're not happy, but they'll say, oh, no, everything's okay. But I can see there's more of, like, a gripping. So we want to be honest as Buddhists, too. Let's see the other thing I was going to say, causing... Yeah. Please, you have a question? Please.
Sorry to interrupt. It's not about that. It's about something you comment before.
Please.
When you mentioned that you had you were going to share these teachings, but not having realizations, I was wondering... How does your teacher know that somebody else has realization? I mean, is there a protocol or, you know, some kind of like test, or how do you know that you don't have realizations or they do have realizations and they receive the teachings through realization? What is that like? Or
what do you guys think about? It's a good question. What do you guys think about that question? David. Is so one thing, and it's different American style versus Tibetan style. These are two dynamically opposite cultures, I find, more and more. Okay? So my teachers, I've got a lot of teachers, but it's better to start slowly, you know, find one authentic teacher. And when I say guru, it's really a highly qualified teacher. And in the Lam Rim text, they actually state, that they list qualities that you're looking for in a teacher that makes sense. So through my experience, and I'll just use one teacher, for instance, is Lama Zopa Rinpoche, my main teacher. Okay? So when I met him, I didn't have any idea about guru. The word scared me initially. You know, it talked about somebody controlling your mind. And what he's really interested in is you controlling your mind. He doesn't need to control your mind. He wants you to get control of your mind. That's a really authentic, qualified guru. They're not about follow me. They're about here's information. You know, and they're a little bit like, this is the experience I've had with some of my teachers. They've been to the treasure chest. They know where it is. If you're interested in the treasure and getting there, which I think everybody wants because it's your happiness, it's ultimate happiness, they've been there, and what they do is they've got a map, and they've got an individual map for each of you, and it's all different. Your journeys are all different. So if you connect with this authentic being, they can shortcut your path to the treasure. But unfortunately, our limited egos get in the way. So while Rinpoche suggests, and if you're a close disciple, you might seek advice. Any of you can do that. You don't have to be a nun to do it. You can be a lay person, as I did before as a lay person. I would ask him for some advice about practice, something, but you do need to follow the advice if you're going to ask, you know. But because they've been to the treasure, they know exactly what, you know, when you ask a question, of better to give them choices rather than saying, to sit in front of him and say, what should I do, you know. Better to say, I'm interested in doing this, this, or this. It's easier for them to steer a moving vehicle. You follow the advice, and then what I found is that he would suggest something. And so I noticed that occasionally, and this happens with my friends as well at the similar time into Buddhism, occasionally, like he's saying, you know, this is the shortest path, but I'm going, but I need to go over to that lake over there. How come you didn't tell me to go to the lake? And he's like, because the shortest path to the treasure's over here. And, you know, I'm going, but, I don't, you know. So we have all these different things, but through my own passage with him, slowly getting to know him, spending more time, it's apparent to me that he knows my mind. He's read my mind right in front of me, blatantly. So it inspires me that maybe my mind can be like his one day. And he opens up things to myself about my own mind that I'm too dense to notice. That's the really qualified guru, teacher. Guru means spiritual friend. virtuous friend, your spiritual guide. So for me, it's a little bit, at my limited level, it seems that he's got a very high level of realization based on how he acts, what he's advised people to do, what he's advised me to do, that he's directly read my mind and things like that. For your own self, I think you start to notice shifts in your mind, and you start noticing you're a little bit more patient, that there's an old habitual pattern that you normally would do in this circumstance, and it doesn't automatically come out anymore. Now you've got something more positive responding. And so we have little insights all the time. I think for people from the States, we have an idea on a spiritual path that one day I come into the Gompa and I'm at the course and they're talking about something and suddenly, you know, I see purple and blue lights and, you know, halos go out from her head and I have tears pouring down my face and then the sky opens up and God says, you know, boo or something. We think it's going to be very grandiose, right? But the thing is, we have little insights all the time. And they're very significant. You know, you one day you notice that you're a little bit more patient in traffic. That's so significant. You have no idea. And the thing is, if you have all these little insights and you're over here, you and the and you might say the mess of your mind and you're here, and then you have all these little slow growth, little steps, insights, and then all of a sudden you're over here. That's how it works. So we have to give ourselves credit for these little things that are showing up that shifts in the consciousness. Now the thing is, Tibetan tradition, and I'm a little bit traditional this way, Tibetan tradition, they never tell you that they have any insights. They'll never tell you. I think people that do tell you about their realizations, then I question. It's a little bit like those who know don't say, and those who say don't know. You know that expression? So Tibetan tradition is, you keep it kind of to yourself. Now, only recently, have the last 10 years, maybe 15 years, I've been at teachings with His Holiness the Dalai Lama, and he may say something about some realization that he's had. And I always get like chills, and I get very inspired by it, and I think he does it for that reason, that it really moves us. He'll say, I remember once I was at the back of a large audience of a massive amount of people. He remembered once being a poor Indian at the back of a massive crowd at a teaching that the Buddha was giving. It would really move me because I was like, if His Holiness was this poor Indian at the back, now I don't know what his mind was like, but poor 2,600 years ago, now he's His Holiness the Dalai Lama. Like, I can progress. Like, it's possible for me too because I'm the poor Indian even back further. But I'm ordinary, but the Buddha was ordinary at one point. He was an ordinary being just like us. So you need to sometimes come to the path and come to your relationship with enlightenment. From there, think about them. They were ordinary beings at one point, just like me. Just like me. If I want to make some effort, if I want to try to improve a little bit more in this life, then I'm building on that. And that's the best we can do sometimes. I hope that's helpful.
Yeah, I like that.
That was the long answer. Sorry.
Maybe I was the bug flying.
The bug, distance. That's right. But I hope, does that answer your question?
Yes.
Any other questions? Are we had? Okay. So here's a few things about also the relationship I mentioned with enlightenment is believing it's, and this is about more mind transformation, believing it's possible. So I know people that say, I'm stuck, you know, I'm always angry, they'll say to about themselves. I'm just angrier. People in chronic depression, some of you know these people or are these people. I've had a friend, it's been now, I think she's been depressed about 42 years. Severely depressed. Okay. So when this happens, she's kind of like, she's a depressed person. This is her take on herself. She's a depressed person. She suffers greatly from it. She's tried everything. Doctors, therapy, medication, all kinds of things she's been through. Okay. But she's stuck in, like, this is it. This is how I am, you know, stuck in this thing. So I remember, I've known her since I was a teenager. And one time I was with her more recently when we were reminiscing about something we did when we were 15. I remember visiting her, and we had this really fun, kind of strange day together, and it was really great fun. And she wasn't depressed then. It was before she suffered from the depression. And so we were talking about it, and we started laughing. And then I said, remember, and I said, you weren't depressed then. I just interjected. And then she thought about it, because for her, she's always been depressed now. This is her view of her life. So she stopped and then remembered and said, oh, yeah. And I said, so if there was a time you weren't depressed, then there's a time in the future that you won't. It's in your mind not to be depressed, too. But the other rut is heavier for her, more habituated. It's a habit, more habituated. Her mind's used to being depressed. So that's how she identifies the whole world she sees through that veil. She's not a Dharma person, but she's interested like that. So you can see the veil of what's set up. So it's a little bit kind of reminding us that it's absolutely possible to change any condition in your mind. Can change any condition in your mind, including positive situations right now in your mind can decrease based on what negative people you hang around with, what influences, you know, all these certain habits. But we're working on improving, so it's great. So it's helpful to remind people like that, if they're interested about impermanence, that things are always changing. The other thing we have to understand is karma. Karma. Karma, again, a Sanskrit word that means action. Means action. It's the movement of mind. The movement of mind. So again, the movement of mind creates imprints in our consciousness. And you've heard teachings on karma before, a lot of you. So again, the activities of your body, speech and mind, they all leave an imprint in your consciousness. Every movement of your consciousness leaves an imprint. So if I have positive movements, meaning a happy thought, I got somebody flowers, I gave somebody chocolate, I'm happy to see somebody, I paid for somebody's meal, whatever, a kindness to somebody, that leaves a positive imprint in your mind. And that will definitely ripen. If that imprint's not destroyed by anger or some really heavy negative delusion, will absolutely, definitely ripen in happiness for you. And the negative imprints we make with our body, speech, and mind will definitely ripen in suffering for us, like that, unless we purify them first. So somebody that's chronically depressed or chronically anxious, okay, there's karma at play. And it could be something done in this life, and it could be something done in past lives, because Buddhists believe in reincarnation. And it doesn't mean you necessarily need to understand the cause, but if you acknowledge that there could be a preceding cause to it, because where else does it come from is a question I ask people. Something else to think about. Where else does that kind of suffering come from? So if it does come from preceding moments of that or a previous cause in the mind at somewhere, on one level, the suffering that I'm going through, this is a way to transform the mind too, the suffering I'm experiencing every time I'm depressed is a type of purification. Every time you suffer, Buddhism says, you're clearing something out. It's a type of purification. This is not about making yourself suffer. We're not masochists. Okay? But when suffering turns up, how do I want, instead of just crying about it and rolling in bed in pain and shutting down and everything, it's kind of like, okay, I've got this illness. It's serious, you might say. And so many other people on the planet have this illness. What if I just had the thought is to take on all their illness like this one, in my illness, and it's not going to harm me, but let it harm my self-cherishing. Okay? And let me offer them, this is basic Tonglin, let me offer them all the happiness, all the freedom from disease, all the freedom from anxiety and depression. A very powerful thought for you to have. Beginning of mind training. Very powerful thought for you to have. And if you can't do anything else and you can get your mind used to Tonglin, taking and giving, taking the suffering, offering the happiness. And then that's what, again, you've made a habit in your mind of that. And we'll talk more tomorrow. It's like mounting it on your breath, they say in the teachings. You're breathing anyway. You're breathing in. You're breathing out. We take it for granted most of the time. You're breathing in. You're breathing out. So when I breathe in, why don't I take the suffering in the world? Let it chip away at a constricted knot I can imagine at my core of my self-cherishing. Let it diminish that. Diminish that, purify that. And then as that's diminished and purified, I'm more spacious and happy. Okay? And I offer from there. I offer to them all the happiness, all the bliss, all the peace, all the freedom from imbalanced mind, all the freedom from disease like that. So again, believing it's possible to change the mind. That's a really important factor, that you're not stuck, I'm always like this, I'll always be like this. Let's get out of that thinking, okay? Anything can change, it's possible, okay? You want to also, here's another step, we need to see the shortcomings of self-cherishing and the benefits of cherishing others. How's that working for you? Because I know a lot of people that feel like, no, I need to take care of myself, it's about me first. Okay, so again, this is an attitude. You do need to take care of yourself. Absolutely, it's very important. But within reason. Within reason. So there's many areas where you can be more spacious. I just noticed, so I flew down here today from Philadelphia where I'm based. I flew down and I just notice getting off the plane. There's some people that have to be, you know, they're going to get their bag and hit the guy on the head with the bag coming out of the, you know, you see people that are like reaching, you know, it's like, you'll be there in a second. Like, you know, we're coming to your baggage thing area, you know, chill. Like you see other people just waiting and they're like, it's okay. And one woman was the seat in front of me and the guy in front of me was like, and then she said, oh no, I've got a bag. It's okay. Well, you go. Cause she knew she'd take up extra time. You know, but we could wait. She can get her bag. What's the big deal? I mean, unless you're running for a connection. Okay, and just tell people. That's happened to me on a plane. I'm going to miss this connection. Let people go if they're trying to make a connection. Right? So think about it. There's many, many areas like that. You just notice how, you know, and then sometimes I drop my mindfulness, and then here comes me, myself, and I down the aisle. Like, out of my way. You know, it just happens, you know. So can you then, here's another gentle way to approach mind training, Lojong, with humor. It's really important, gentleness towards yourself and humor. I find it really helpful. You know, really helpful to use the humor. Talk to your delusion. Talk to your delusion. And I've noticed this with myself. So is first identify your biggest delusion. What are the biggest two for you? You're talking about, let's say, pride, jealousy, anger, hatred, grasping, attachment, desire, confusion, ignorance, fear, anxiety, depression, you know, laziness. You could go on and on. What would somebody call out a delusion over there? All of the above. All of the above, right? But probably a couple probably bounced up a little stronger for you. So you want to go after those first. Which are the ones that are like, bing? So for me, it was anger. I just always thought I was an angry person and going after anger. So now what I've got it down to irritation, annoyance, and frustration. Kind of, I catch it at that level, but I'll watch my mind. I'm a nun. I still get irritated. But because I'm a human being. I'm not perfect. But I'll notice, like, here comes the person that I'm really challenged by. There they are. And now, before I would just be annoyed. I'd be like, oh God. You know, and now I'm kind of like, you know, here we go. Buckle your seatbelt. You know, I mean, this is going on in my mind, and I'll think like, and you know, so, and it's really with a smile on my face, there's irritation. There it is. And more quickly, let irritation go. It's just another bubble bubbling up in my mind. And I can pop it. I don't need that. This is a sentient being. This is a sentient being, right? And in the morning, I had my motivation to benefit all sentient beings. All sentient beings. But so what happens is when anger turns up, it's to benefit all sentient beings except this jerk. Right? That's what we usually... But now I'm like, you know, and my mindfulness, so I'm breathing, and I'm like, I am challenged by this person at times. And there may be people you need to seriously shield yourself from if they've abused you or they continue to abuse. Or certainly we want to use our wisdom. So again, if this person did some things that I didn't think were so cool before, then let me insert some wisdom to better address what's going to go on. Oh, they want to make plans again with me to do this workshop, whatever, but the last three times we did it, they weren't prepared at all. They didn't have anything ready, and then they asked me to save a date for them for this thing, but then when the date dropped and they couldn't get the room booking, they never got back to me to say they weren't going to do it on that date. This has happened three times. So I see this, so I'm a little bit like, okay, and then here they are again, oh, are we going to do the workshop? And I'm like, you know, and on one level, I might really like the person. So be clear. You can communicate clearly with compassion and wisdom. That's what my mind training's telling me. Okay, so I might have to be a little clearer to say, okay, here's our date, but if the date changes for you and you don't get the room, I need you to let me know right away. Can you do that? And I might even say, because the last two times you didn't, and I didn't schedule some things, and then at the last minute you told me it wasn't happening. So, oh, and I'm sorry. So I'm a little, you can be warier, and again, insert your wisdom. You have every right to do it, but you want to do it from a good attitude. Like that. Slowly. So we're out of time tonight. Any last questions, confusion? You have some exercises, okay? You have homework. So please, you have a sleeping meditation. You have a waking meditation. You have the eight worldly dharmas. We're very busy now in this Lojong class. Okay. Try your best, okay? And so please, I hope to see some of you tomorrow or Sunday. We are definitely going to have some fun. And I would like, in closing, to dedicate, so whatever merit, we're going to use the gold prayer book again, please. Whatever merit we have created from our time together, I'd really like to dedicate and invest it in our being able to be honest and gently start really more deeply observing our minds, if you're not already doing that, so we can get used to how our minds respond in various circumstances and then use that to transform the problems and situations that arise into something more glorious so we're happier. May it help us move along a path to becoming Buddhas quickly, because so many are suffering, and may we then be of the most benefit to all beings. Like that. Page 235. We're going to read these three standard dedication prayers. Thank you. Do you do in Tibetan, or do you like to do in English? Or English, okay. Okay. Got a good answer? No, sometimes you ask people and everybody's like, great response. Due to the merits of these virtuous actions, may I quickly attain the state of a Guru Buddha and lead all living beings without exception into that enlightened state. May the supreme jewel bodhicitta that has not arisen arise and grow. May that which has arisen not diminish, but increase more and more. Just as the brave Manjushri and Samantabhadra too realize things as they are, to dedicate all these merits in the best way that I may follow their perfect example. Page 244, the Long Life Prayers for His Holiness and Lama Zopa Rinpoche. 244. In the land encircled by snow mountains, you are the source of all happiness and good. All-powerful Chinresig Tenzin Gyatso, please remain until samsara ends. You who uphold the subduer's moral way, who serve as the bountiful bearer of all, sustaining, preserving, and spreading Manjunas' victorious doctrine, who masterfully accomplished magnificent prayers honoring the three jewels, Savior of myself and others, your disciples, please, please live long. And for all the beings on the planet who need additional healing, may they receive it immediately. And if you don't mind, to keep my father, Marvin Miller, in your prayers. He was just diagnosed with lung cancer. So it may be treatable, but he's also almost 92, and he's not experiencing any discomfort, but I would love to direct some positive energy in all the beings on the planet who, some of whom are here, that also have cancer and have some serious diseases, that can we help and hold them in our hearts that they can find relief from any suffering. Thank you very, very much. Hope to see you tomorrow.